Cape Talk.
Ask Dr. Josh.
All right, so did you know that January is Codependency Awareness Month? Codependency is often what's called a disorder of lost self. People who are codependent have lost their connection to their innate self, and instead their thinking and behaviour revolve around another person. Their inner deprivation and this lack of connection to their real self makes them dependent on other people for validation, and consequently their self-image, their thinking, their behaviour are other-oriented in order to validate, I guess, their self-esteem and fragile ego. Well, does this sound like you? Does it sound like somebody you were in a relationship with? If so, stay tuned as we're joined by clinical psychologist and behavioural scientist Dr. Josh Klapo, taking your calls and questions to help us understand this complex condition. And if you'd like to get in touch but don't feel comfortable giving your real name, that is perfectly okay. You can be anonymous, that's all right. Josh, great to have you back on. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Sure, Jane.
So let's start at the beginning. What are the telltale signs that someone is codependent or has codependency issues?
Oh my gosh. your description and the opening was actually really quite accurate. And I think one of the challenges we have with codependency, it's one of those words that everybody's kind of heard of, particularly around addictions and sort of addictions and addiction families, but we have all these nuances. So things like you said, being sort of other-focused versus self-focused, having poor boundaries, always feeling the need to not only take care of other people, like physically, but take on their pain and take on the problems of everything they do, fixating on your own mistakes, having a need to be liked by everybody. And what's interesting about codependency is, and this really holds true for all of these, any disorder, everything I just said, we've all known people like this. We've all been like this to one degree or another at some point in time. So these are not characteristics that are not uncommon. It's when they all come together, when they're very strong, and, like for everything else, when they create a hindrance in the person's ability to function in life. Mm-hmm. That's when it becomes, if you will, a disorder versus more of a characteristic.
So, and you mentioned the word addiction there, Dr. Josh. Is codependency an addiction? And you've also mentioned the word disorder. So can it be both, or is it just one?
So we have a couple things. We definitely have what's called dependent personality disorder, which is really the difference there is it dependent personality disorder is really a codependency with one person or a specific individual, and to contrast that, codependency is more of a way of being with multiple individuals in your life, and so. Codependency is not an addiction in the way or a substance use type disorder. It is really a way of interacting and relating to the world that is as you described, so much other focused that we literally can't function independently on our own. And that becomes problematic not only for us, but for the people whom we latch on to as codependents.
Mm, mm. So speaking of those people that we latch on to as codependent, here's a question for you. Does it take two people to be in a codependent relationship? And is it true that a codependent person would then inevitably attract other codependents in their key relationships?
It's an interesting, yes, I'm not laughing. I'm laughing because it's so fascinating. It takes two to tango in codependency because by definition, if you take a person who is, quote, is codependent and you isolate them from everybody, then there is nobody to be codependent upon. By definition, it has to be with somebody else.
Mm.
But also to your point, one of the things that's interesting about codependency is individuals who are codependent have such a need for validation from somebody else, such a need to rely on somebody else to define who they are, to solve their problems, to navigate, that while you would think that two people with codependency problems would come together, they may initially, but very often they repel each other, because there is no, to be honest, there's no strength. There's nothing strong to grab from.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so they struggle with another person who is also the like codependent. And so what you end up having is somebody who is a codependency view of the world, an approach to the world, latching on to somebody who's typically not, who initially kind of buys into the relationship and then realizes, what am I dealing with? This is not right. And very often goes away. That is why individuals with codependency have a hard time retaining relationships. They drive people away.
If you're just joining us, clinical psychologist and behavioral scientist Dr. Josh Klapo is with us, taking your calls and questions to help us understand codependence. January is Codependency Awareness Month. And if anything that Dr. Josh is describing sounds like you, and you've got a question, you'd like to give us a call, perhaps explain a relationship or relationships that you've been in where you can see clearly that you or perhaps another person were being codependent, we'd love to hear from you. 021-446-0567. Is the number to dial to get us in studio. You can send us an SMS to 31567 or a WhatsApp to 0725671567. Where is codependency likely to originate from?
Early childhood.
Right, yeah. surprise.
Sorry. I wish I had something far more interesting. I mean, it tends to be early childhood. There's a few things. Early childhood attachment. So insecure attachment with parents or other sorts of adults. Early childhood trauma. And when I say trauma, it does not have to be trauma like physical abuse or sexual abuse. It can be something like fear of abandonment because of a divorce, or a particularly difficult childhood in which there was a contentious marital relationship and the child felt as if they were going to be left by themselves or their world had got ripped out from them. So it can be everything from the horrific sexual, physical abuse, drug abuse, those kinds of things, to literally a child of divorce or a child maybe who was adopted, and has attachment challenges early on. That's number one. That's kind of where it the seed can be planted. From there, it very often is fueled by relationships and relationship outcomes. They can be intimate relationships. So being with a first boyfriend or girlfriend where you were abandoned or the other person had all kinds of problems, you tried to change them, and this can be as early as 15, 16 years old, you were unsuccessful, it can be that, but it doesn't even have to be love relationships, it can be peer relationships. So same sort of thing, you're the caretaker in the relationship. You become the one who's fixing everybody, and as a result, none of your needs are met. And so, like any other condition, Sarah Jane, the seed is usually planted genetically. There's a component there. It's usually comes to life through early childhood learning experiences, traumatic experiences, or extreme experiences can bring it to light faster, and then it can be fostered over time if it's not intervened upon.
Yeah. Okay, I get it. So it's not everyone who will have gone through the things that you're speaking about who will necessarily become codependent, right?
Absolutely not. Most people won't. That's such an important point. Most people will not, because the percentage, 50% of the population in the world is not codependent.
Yeah.
So you are absolutely right. When you ask me where does it come from, these are things that can trigger it if there's nothing buffering against it. buffering against it can be good genetics. It can be a supportive environment in the face of something like divorce or abuse. It can be a disposition or a change of life trajectory. But I will tell you, particularly with codependency, much like an addiction, it's one of those sort of personality and psychological experiences that gets fostered and nurtured and repeated and learned and ingrained and habitual. Very much so. And so if it's not caught early, if somebody isn't taken down a different path, if they don't learn how to sort of live with themselves, then they can bounce from relationship to relationship, and this codependency becomes more and more and more, particularly if it runs in the family. Then there's family modeling as well that that influences it.
What's the payoff of codependency? When we think about addiction, particularly addiction in its early form, there is a payoff. It's that, you know, if I'm taking drugs, it's because I'm escaping. Oh, the voice is going. The voice is going. It's because I want to escape from how I'm feeling. And the payoff of taking drugs or using something else, or I guess a behavior, is I'm trying to escape. So is that the same payoff for codependency?
It is. I mean, codependency has this, when you peel it back underneath, it is this validation and false sense of security. They want to feel connected to you, to somebody, and by becoming that reliant on somebody for their needs, for their emotional needs, there is an intimacy that is reinforcing. And the problem is there's no boundary to it. So, you know, think about this. With relationships and couples, you complete me. You are my everything. I feel that when I am with you, I am okay in the world, right? These are things that we say to our loved ones. Well, we don't just say it because we like it. We say it because it feels great. There, a codependency, that is the payoff. But then there is a fear component. Mm. Oh, my God, if this goes away, I will cease to exist. So it goes from being rewarding to a what we call sort of a loss aversion. I can't back off. I can't set a boundary because if I do, then I won't be able to exist in my own world.
Yeah, yeah. We've had a message in from Elsa B in Belleville who says, I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. When my doctor told me why she was making that diagnosis, it sounded very much like what I'd read about codependency. Are they two different things? Thanks for your message, Elsa B.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they are two different things. There's commonality. Boundaries is probably the first that comes to my mind about sort of the common denominator between the two, but they are not the same thing. What makes borderline and codependency really the similar is this difficulty or inability or challenge in knowing where sort of your boundaries are as an individual and somebody else in your life. And this is why you see individuals with borderline personality disorder and codependency taking things to the extreme. And when I say taking to the extreme, as it relates to other individuals, mm-hmm. whether it's love, whether it's acts of romance, acts of violence, acts of cries for help, there really is not a line between what's okay for me and what's okay for this other person who is not me. It all becomes blurred for the borderline individual, borderline, and the codependent. It's all one mashed up existence. And that, as you can imagine, does not only make it difficult for the individual with borderline personality or codependency, it makes it very difficult for the people that they're interacting with.
Yeah, yeah. And on that, if you are a codependent and in a partnership with a with another person, this is going back to if, and I know that you said that largely if you've got two codependents, the relationship just simply can't work because there's no, I guess there is no payoff because the other person's not providing the thing that you need. But if you're codependent and in a partnership with another codependent person who isn't recognizing that codependency, can you possibly achieve a more balanced, healthy relationship with them if you change, but they don't?
Hang on, I need a second to process that. If you change, and so you become less codependent and they don't.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
let me just say this. Look, there are all kinds of relationships out there in this wonderful world of ours. And as a psychologist, I have seen things that, you know, you scratch your head and you go, I have no idea how this is working, but it seems to be working. So in that way, yes, it can work. But if you think about it this way, think about it for your listener, Sarah Jane, just from a health standpoint. Think about it instead of mental health or mental health issues or codependency, from a health standpoint.
Mm.
If you're codependent and you have a codependent condition, you are less than optimally healthy and you need to do things to manage that condition, right? Mm. Well, like if it was diabetes, like if it was heart disease or anything else. So if you think about it, and you may never be able to get rid of it, but you need to keep it in control. And the less that you have it managed, the less healthy you are. So if you put two individuals together in a relationship, and both are unhealthy in that way, and one becomes more healthy, then very often what happens is the person who becomes more healthy goes, starts looking at the other person saying, hey, I'm doing better. I need you to do better too. I need you to be healthy too. We're not going to exist well if I'm healthy and you're not healthy. And that's how I encourage people to think about anything in this realm of mental health. It's not so much make it go away.
Yeah.
But it is your job, if you have a condition of any sort, to manage it in the best way that you can so you can be as healthy as you can. But if you're in a relationship, so the person you're with gets the best iteration of you, not the worst iteration of you.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess it's in the same way. I remember when I was in treatment, there was this the idea that you would hook up with another person who was also in early recovery was so frowned upon. Why would you want to get into a relationship with somebody who, by their own admission, is very unwell? You want to presumably be the best version of yourself. And also what I also saw was people who started to get clean, their partners, regardless of whether their partners were also drug addicts, but there became a codependency there that they stayed with the addict. As soon as the addict got clean, it no longer worked because the payoff, I guess, wasn't there. Yeah.
And that's why, that's where we, you know, sort of get that codependency initially from, is the payoff's not there. There's no one to take care of. Plus, as people change, the dynamic, even if it's a dysfunctional dynamic, falls apart. So again, it's like a car that has a bad timing belt. It's running not well. And all of a sudden we change something and now the car's in better shape, but the timing belt needs to be changed out because the timing belt doesn't work at all. And that's what's happening when there's change in that kind of relationship and that dynamic is no longer there and the addict gets clean, the addict becomes a different person. And that person may or may not be somebody that the partner wants to be with.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We've had a message in from Marilyn in Bergfleet, who says, Dr. Josh, what's the link between narcissism and codependency and how does it affect families? Ah, now this is a topic I think we touched on back in August. Thanks for your question, Marilyn. What's the link between narcissism and codependency and how does it affect families?
So it's an interesting thing because you almost look at narcissism, at least the caricature of narcissism, as almost the opposite of codependency. You kind of look at it as, you know, the narcissist is the conceited, the boastful, the full of themselves.
Doesn't need anybody.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas the codependent is the meek and I can't do this without you. But you know what underlies both of them? And to answer your listener's question, it is fear. It is fear and it is insecurity. And it is a fear of themselves. It is a lack of security with who they are. It's most covered up in the narcissist, because the narcissist sort of takes the exact opposite. But what's underlying both is, I am not okay with myself as I am in the world. Now, how does it impact families? What you end up getting is you get two people who are driven by fear, one who takes on this very sort of aggressive, it's all about me, it's all about me and what I want to do, in a very sort of assertive, aggressive sort of way. And you get another person, that the codependent, it's all about me, but it's all about me in sort of a passive, meek, I need to take care of way. And the problem is, both are very unhealthy, both play out in different ways, but both are very egocentric, even in the codependent. The codependent, who's busy taking care of everybody else, Sarah Jane, is taking care of everybody else to meet their own needs.
Yeah. Some of the most codependent people I've ever met have been some of the most, some of the least, I don't know what the word is, but they would almost sort of martyr syndrome. Everything is happening to me and I'm doing my best thing for you. But really, once you look underneath, you realize that their motivation is constantly about them.
That's exactly right. Again, we think of this, the martyr is a great example. You look at the martyr and we think, oh, poor them. But it's all about them. It's all about their needs. It's all about their fears. It's all about their need for validation. It's all about their need to take care of somebody. It's all about them. This is where the boundary issue comes in. Because it's never all about us. It is about us, and it is about us as we relate to other people. And whether it's the martyr, whether it is the narcissist, this inability to know where the boundaries are about what's okay for us to take care of ourselves versus needing the world to somehow take care of us. For the narcissist, the world takes care of us by doing everything that I need it to do in the way that I want it to do. And for the codependent, the world takes care of us by sort of laying ourselves out there and saying, I am here, help me, help me, help me.
Say that again, John. Say that last part again.
So if you think about it, the narcissist and the codependent need the world, the external world, to work for them, because their internal world is so ridden with fear, and fear, shame, doubt. And so instead of it being, I'm okay with myself the way I am and what I need to do, the narcissist says, get out of my way, I need the world to be constructed in a way that fits me, right? And I don't really care about anybody else, because I'm scared to death that if the world's not constructed in the way that it fits me, I'm going to fall apart.
Yeah.
The codependent says, I need the world to embrace me. I need to be with other people. I need to have everyone like me. I can't make any mistakes. I need to be in control. It's exactly the same way. It's a demand on the world to accommodate our inability to self-regulate.
We've had a message in from Alex in Gardens that says, my partner often disappears without warning. He refuses to communicate with me, sometimes for days, but I always end up taking him back. I know I'm codependent and it's a pattern that's been around all my relationships, but I feel stuck and unable to get out of it. Oh, Alex. Anonymous says that I've lived with my son's addiction since he was 17. I still live with it, and he's 35 years old and has been in jail more times than I can count. He is addicted to drugs, and when he comes out, we welcome him home to disrupt our lives again. I'm exhausted, but can't stop the cycle. Please help.
Yeah, so let me look. Maybe codependency, but maybe not. And this is, codependency is one of those words I don't, you know, it's like saying depression or you're depressed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe those are both. But look, a parent is always a parent. And the hardest thing for a parent to ever do is to cut ties with their child. That, by definition, is not codependency. That is the parental instinct. Mm. So, like, if you think about the one you said, comes home, we always welcome him home, and he disrupts our lives. Yes, there may be codependency, but it also may simply be that parental instinct to never outcast or send off your child. Mm. I see that all the time. In the relationship one, again, we don't have a lot of details, but it may be the same thing. It may or may not be codependency. It may be that this person loves this other person. He loves them dearly. And the hardest thing in the world for this person is to say, you're not good for me. That doesn't make you necessarily codependent. Yeah. And I think it's important your listeners know that. Just because you're connected to someone in an unhealthy relationship and you welcome them back or you tolerate something, it doesn't mean by definition that you're codependent. It may mean that you're having a challenge with, am I going to cut ties or not?
Yeah, understood. We're running out of time, Josh, but just one more question. How, I suppose, when we look at this, is the treatment of codependence, or certainly learning different behaviors and different methods of coping and different ways of interacting in relationships?
So it's a couple things. The relationship itself, very often if it's a couple of some sort, couples therapy, so that the two learn how to interact with each other given this one person or both persons' condition. From the individual standpoint, it really is, I mean, sometimes we use medication, but it is a sort of cognitive reframing. And what it is it's learning how to self-soothe. It's learning that I can be okay in the world by testing things out and interacting with people in ways where there are boundaries. And it's by having the people in their lives set those boundaries and not waffle on them. Mm-hmm. So what you basically teach a person is a self-efficacy model. And you teach them that, oh, when this other person sets the boundaries and I can't penetrate them, I'm still okay. I'm still okay. And like every other condition, Sarah Jane, the longer it's been going on, the more effort it's going to take to make that shift. And you may always have someone who leans towards codependency, but you definitely can have somebody who leads a healthy, fruitful life even with those tendencies.
Yeah, yeah. Josh, it's always great to chat to you. Thanks so much. Next week, we're talking about forgiveness. And I'm looking forward to that conversation. But for now, goodbye. We'll chat next week.
Thank you, Sarah Jane.